This is Sophie, and you're listening to the Jew and the Gentile podcast.
Also warning you that I am currently reading.
God.
Yeah. This book.
Yeah, we can't see it.
Okay. It's The River Flows from Eden, The Language of Mystical Experience in the Zohar by Melilla Hellner Eshed.
Is that the one with Adam Sandler? Or is the hairstylist?
No. The Zohar is the text of Jewish mysticism. And it is fascinating. Gail and I studied with her on a weekend that she was doing a scholar in residence in Durham. And if you thought that I was obnoxious about Torah and Kabbalah, I'm going to be even more insufferable.
You know, Charles, I wouldn't limit yourself just to being insufferable with Torah and Kabbalah. I mean, there's pretty much anything, everything. It's,
yeah.
Well, other than Mary and Gail, that's maybe the one bright point.
Right.
And the boys seem to be good. So, you know.
Yeah, well, that's why I'm warning you that this is just going to up my game. So you better start doing some background reading on it, because I'm going to start bringing it up.
Well, now, what if I did that based on what last night I read all about elimination disorder? You know, like, if you ever want to talk about somebody pooping and peeing inappropriately, I read through that whole section of DSM not 24 hours ago. I'm going to tell you.
Now, there's a cold open for you.
What, you know, elimination disorders?
Yeah.
Like, they're literally
isn't that kind of like a description of what we do?
Oh, no, we're beyond a disorder now. We're like a full-blown psychosis.
No, it's like people who anger shit and wipe it on the walls and stuff.
Oh, no, I've had them. No, I didn't know that was that part of that.
Yeah.
They're also known as January 6th insurrectionists.
There's also, like, I'm actually on a Star Trek thread yesterday, someone was talking about their old roommate used to shit in diapers and hide them around the house.
Mm-hmm. And well, then, that's not a disorder. Like, that's just a kink.
Yeah.
It's pretty disordered.
Yeah.
Is angry shit actually a word, a phrase? Like, is that like?
Yeah, it's in the DSM.
Yeah, I used to have a client that would do it. He'd get pissed and he'd get mad at you and he'd go in his room and he'd shit on the walls and he'd spread it everywhere. But right.
Well, before the rest of the train jumps the tracks, let's get started.
You know, let's think about angry poops. I just want to have one poop a week that doesn't involve me having to turn a fan on and drink a bottle of Powerade afterward. Just that I'm to that point in my life now where getting a little action can either be having sex or being regular. Both are.
Hey, I'll tell you, there's nothing like
increase
having a
your
good
fiber
shit
in your water and you should be fine.
Yeah, but that doesn't help the wife.
No. Mm-hmm. No.
But I can't help that. I'm at that age where what I look forward to is that really nice shit where I have to buckle my belt. I get to buckle it a notch smaller.
You shit yourself in the smaller size of the pants.
Yeah.
See, now that is
that's a good day
right there.
Yeah.
Get that in to make that'll be funny. I'm like this, you know, you being insufferable with Kabbalah.
All right, we ready to roll here?
Yeah, we've been rolling.
I thought we were rolling. We got the elimination thing out of the way.
Yeah, but I mean officially. Like on the script.
Yeah, sure.
Okay. I'm Charles Breton.
I'm Helena Epstein.
And I'm Chris Henson. Together we are
a Jew
and
a Gentile walking to
a bar
mitzvah.
And this is episode 153. Welcome to the podcast where you will find the theology, cigars, whiskey, and F-bombs. We're obviously available wherever you find your podcasts, but we're also available at Theology Corner at theologycorner.net. And we're also very happy to be part of the Wild Goose Goosecast Network, a network of faith-based podcasts discussing issues of inclusion and social justice. To learn more about the Wild Goose Festival, go to wildgoosefestival.org. And we will be podcasting live at the Wild Goose this summer. It's in July, the 15th through the 17th. So come and be part of a live audience and see that we are not, in fact, bots, but actual real people. And
now, bots would be way better at this than we are.
Eh, maybe.
I feel.
You feel.
I feel.
That we will probably be one of the first people put out of work by AI doing these kind of podcasts. And on this episode, it's the three of us. So I'm here. I'm the Jew, Chris Henson, the Gentile, and of course, Helena Epstein, the ampersand of reason. And
resident Canadian.
Our resident Canadian. And so we are going to just do a few shout outs and shameless plugs. Virgil Cane Whiskey, our official rye whiskey of our podcast.
It's Four been Saints a minute Brewing since I've Company. Had some Virgil Cane.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. They've had a change.
They don't sell in the state.
Yeah, well, you can order it in. It is sold. You just got to find an ABC that sells it.
I hadn't found one.
Yeah.
But well worth it for the listeners to get a nip of.
Absolutely. Four Saints Brewing Company. Great beer for great people. And they are actually talking with the Wild Goose about maybe being the beer vendor.
That's exciting.
People will be so pleased. Did you see that their Instagram feed? They have AI versions of each of their beers. Like if their beers were people. It's like three or four of them. Impending Grace is one of them. Thank you.
Yes.
But one of them, I swear to God, looks like the Mad Welshman himself. Phil Wyman. I forget which one it was, but I was like, I nearly sent it to you going, wow, that's an uncanny resemblance. Of course, anybody who looks like Gandalf, basically.
Yeah.
You know,
true. But... also, Felix Azzeline, our official cigar and friend of the podcast. Ethan Sapphire, who does our intro and outgo music. In fact, Ethan has just released a new album of new music. So check him out at ethansapphire.com or at soundclick.com/ethansapphire. Anybody else we need to shamelessly plug?
Continue prayers for Felix and his family, man. Yes,
it's been 4 months since their daughter Gabby passed.
Still lift him up.
You know, it's difficult when you bury a child, but
I can't even imagine.
You know, I let him know that we continue to hold him in thoughts and hold his family close, so he appreciated that. I know no one's smoking at the moment, but I know we're fanning, and I'm going to jump in because I'm going to beat Helena to the punch. Kunk on Earth.
Didn't we do Kunk already?
You can do Kunk all you want.
Just fantastic. Just fantastic. Great. Great. It's on Netflix.
Best thing since Technotronic.
Huh?
Best thing since the song Technotronic was released.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And so I saw an interview with her, and she's a fan of physical comedy. And so whenever she's stuck in an improv or something, she'll just trip and fall. So she'll do it several times when they were filming. And one time she's walking along a hilltop, and she decided, oh, this would be a nice place to do a little trip. And she fell and rolled down the hill, and the crew just kept filming. No one came to help her up because they thought it was a gag, but she really hurt herself rolling down the hill. So what else is out there that we're fanning about?
I broke down and watched The Last of Us. Mm-hmm. As someone that's a huge Walking Dead fan and that sort of genre, my daughter and I watched it in like the first season, and we were just finding ourselves like yelling at the TV, crying. It was just, I mean, it's based on a video game, which usually is a sign of it's not going to be very good. But this was exceptional. So that's my in lieu of cigar.
Mm.
We enjoyed watching that. So lots of potential for podcast topics in it. But then what isn't in the post-apocalyptic era?
Mm-hmm. Helena, what's been occupying your mind lately?
I've been doing like a deep dive into childhood favorite plus the new world. So I'm rewatching Voyager, and we're watching Star Trek Discovery, and we're waiting for the whole of the third season of Picard to come out, and then we'll watch Picard.
Who's the
so
we?
I'm like, my folks are watching. They're.
I didn't know Juan Epstein Goldstein was Goldberg.
No. I live with my folks, so they're going on this journey with me.
Well, that's good. You know, anytime you go on a trip, it's good to have sober people around in case you don't return.
Wait, she is the sober person.
I am a sober person.
Yeah, but she's tripping out on Star Trek. So, you know, you got to have somebody there just in case.
So we're watching Discovery, which is so, like, if you follow, like, the Star Trek communities online at all, like, there's all these memes. Like, they'll be like, Discovery is Star Trek. Like, it's a very divisive show. Like, people really have, and I don't have strong opinions about it yet. I'm only in the second season. I'm seeing like where it's going. It is very different tone. It's weird because it's actually set concurrent with the original series, but the tech is so advanced that it feels kind of disjointed. Like, you have to really suspend something, but like there's also in story reasons why the tech is as advanced as it is, so you have to just kind of go with it. Mm-hmm. Then rewatching Voyager has been a trip because Voyager was airing when my parents got divorced when I was a kid, so I actually kind of lost the thread, like, of what was happening. Like, I don't think I've ever seen the final season of Voyager, so I don't know how it resolves, so that's been pretty cool to watch. And like actually tracking like the character developments and things differently than you can when you're 9. And then I've been double downing even further, and Gates McFadden is hosting a podcast now called Investigates, where she interviews members of different Star Trek franchises, but she doesn't interview them about Star Trek. She asks them about, like, how'd your parents discipline you when you were a child, and what was your relationship like with your grandma, and, you know, how did you get interested in, you know, feng shuiing your apartment or whatever? Like it's totally random.
It's a real niche market right there.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a pretty niche market. Like, it's pretty much like us talking, only instead of about theology, it's about, like, acting stuff. Like, you know, they talk
are
about
you sure? Are you sure
everybody
this is actually
has gone to clown school?
Is this actually a podcast or something that just happened with your parents and you can't recall? This is real.
Okay. Yes. Gates McFadden, plays Dr. Crusher, is the hostess.
Mm-hmm.
No, I'm just letting it go. I'm just letting it all happen. Just going. I invited your son to the Star Trek convention in Las Vegas with me next year. He said he will consider it.
Okay.
I said, if I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it big. I'm going to do it once. It's going to be a thing.
Wait, which Breton child are you talking about?
I guess the eldest.
Okay, that's what I figured. I didn't know.
I texted him. I said, you're the only person in my entire life who might be interested in this. I know no one else that would even remotely be interested in this.
So is it like a Star Trek only convention?
Yeah, it's the only one that's Star Trek only. So it's not a Comic-Con. It's not like it's a Star Trek convention.
Yeah. So they basically started all this stuff. They were doing this in the 70s Star Trek
year.
Conventions.
This is its 57th year.
Yeah, annually. I went to one in Miami Beach, and James Doohan was the special guest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have no idea who that is.
Scotty.
What the fuck?
Yeah. Look, if it doesn't have lightsabers in it.
I'm holding the edge together with my hands.
If I went to the Star Trek convention, I would dress as a Jedi and just start random fights with people. Like, just saying, like, Star Wars is better. And then just sit back and watch the world burn, because I don't have a dog in the fight, really. But I imagine that's
because
you're
showing up at a Star Trek convention and pissing people off on purpose.
It's the closest I'll ever get to, like, MAGA. How about that?
Anyway, so
randomly
that's
showing
my...
up just.
Mm-hmm.
That's been what I'm doing with my brain.
Okay. I just get use of that brain matter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's been good. It's very nostalgic, but it's also nice because it's all like there's a lot of new content right now. So like kind of doing them simultaneously has been good. Like there's like the nostalgic little kid piece of me that's going, and then there's the adult piece of me going like, wow, look where they've taken this in the last 30 years. Like it's really remarkable that not only are they still creating content, but they're still creating relevant and fresh content. It's just remarkable.
See, very this cool. is just taking her further away from falconry. I'm just going to throw that out there.
Yeah, but you may go all Jean-Luc Picard and start a vineyard. So there's that.
What if Picard had a raptor? What if he had a falcon? That seems like something like Patrick
Data
Stewart
had
would
a
have.
Falcon, I think. I remember Data.
See, there, whoever the hell that is, yeah. Falcons.
You know who Data is.
No, I didn't. I literally have never watched an episode of Star Wars. Other than the one about the Tribbles. That's only because my dad forced me.
It's one of the greatest episodes in television history.
The Trouble with Tribbles?
You don't know who Data is?
Yeah, I didn't watch those.
They don't try, Elena. He's beyond help.
I'm beyond help. It's
yeah.
just
yeah.
I don't know if it qualifies as a disorder.
That feels like you've been that feels like an intentional like block. I feel like everybody knows who Data is.
I was traumatized by a Trekkie there. How about that? I'm just trying to. It's dissociative amnesia, which
he's
also
the
read
android.
About last week.
He's the gold guy, Brent Spiner.
The gold guy, on... C-3PO.
Yes, but C-3PO is not based on Isaac Asimov's three rules of robotics.
How did we get on this? I feel like
I don't know. I think you need to cut a commercial in here, and take a break, and come back and do our main topic. Okay?
Can we take a screenshot of Elena's head exploding right now? I mean, God, stop fucking talking.
I don't understand what's happening.
Now,
right
if you wanted her head to explode, I'll tell her about the really iffy Bowie biopic I watched.
That was...
No,
texted us about it. You texted us about it.
I know.
That's the text right where I said like he has to apologize for that Mick Jagger abortion he did, you know, dancing in the streets. I don't care if
I would watch that 100 times over before I watch this biopic again. I mean, not even Marc Maron could save it. It was just okay.
Watch this.
And the fact that they didn't have the budget or get the rights to any of his music, really, just that. Okay. Anyway, so cut in a break, and we'll come back and do our main topic.
Elena, you remind me of the
whatever
Babe.
You're going to say to me, I'm not listening to.
You remind me of the Babe.
What Babe? Yeah.
Babe with the power.
What power?
What power?
The power of voodoo.
Voodoo? Voodoo.
You do?
Do what? Remind me of the Babe.
I can get her with that and also this, like, smoking weed. I forget that.
Smoking weed, smoking weed. Doing dope, drinking beers. Rolling fatty, smoking blunts. Who smokes the blunts? We smoke the blunts. Hey, man, need a nickel bag? $15, little man. Put that shit in my hand. If the money doesn't show you, oh me, oh me, oh my jungle of.
See, it's not, rather than quoting scripture, it's just Kevin Smith movies and Jim Henson. I mean,
Gates McFadden played Dr. Crusher on The Next Generation and was my favorite character. She was my idol as a little kid. She also did all the choreography of the Muppets on The Labyrinth.
Did not know that.
Mm-hmm. No. Yeah, she is like if I ever meet this woman, I will cry and it will be very uncomfortable because I'm a grown ass woman with like a full brain, but I will.
And wearing a Kitty Stardust hoodie.
And wearing a Kitty Stardust.
Hey. She was pretty fangirled out at Wild Goose with the lady that was, I believe was on one of the shows.
Taze Masterson, yeah. I was. And she's not even that big a deal.
Mm-hmm.
No, she probably thinks she is. We'll edit that bit out.
Probably knows where she falls in the hierarchy of the Star Trek universe. But.
Yeah, she's like the fourth person you go see at a mini con.
Yes.
Yeah. Four Saints Brewing Company. Four Saints pays homage to the patron saints of beer, St. Wenceslas, St. Nicholas, St. Luke, and St. Augustine of Hippo. They've become the most recognized patron saints for brewing and beer because of their contributions to and associations with the world's favorite sudsy beverage. Four Saints founders Joel McCloskey and Andrew Deming are carrying on the brewing tradition in hopes of future sainthood, or at least to make some really good beer. Four Saints Brewing Company, Asheboro, North Carolina. So our main topic tonight, we are discussing in our continuing raison d'etre of mental health issues, talking about Canada's MAID law, medical assistance in death. And this began roaming around in 2015, and that a case of Carter v. Canada, that they needed to make some changes to allow for medical assistance in dying. And so in 2016, the Parliament passed federal legislation. And then in 2020, they started this idea of maybe also including not just physical ailments, but also mental health conditions as part of this. And that went back and forth for quite a while. But then in 2022, they added a clause that included mental health illnesses. But then just in February of this year, because this provision was not as well received as they thought, that they had, the Parliament has put a temporary exclusion on it until March of 2024, so they can re-examine this. So it's been very interesting to watch, because this has been one of the first attempts, I believe, of any agency, any government, state, federal, whatever, to include mental health as a provision in assisted dying. So that in and of itself is interesting, but then how they are now rethinking this and where they think some of this is going to end up. Fortunately, we have a resident Canadian who is also a nurse,
healthcare worker,
who is also in the healthcare profession, is also attending school for getting another degree in public health, who can help explain these things to us. So, mainly the if you can take us in into how the discussion came up to begin with to include mental health illnesses. I know they were very, very, very limited. They had a certain provision. It wasn't just like, oh, I'm kind of feeling sad today. It was mainly personality disorders. So if you can, you know, help us with the background on that, and then, you know, where this stands now, what do you think is going to happen? Is this something that might actually stay in the law? Do you think that we're not ready for this yet? So how did this all come about?
So I don't know what, so this is what I understand about the MAID laws and the progression in Canada. So it started out like most MAID laws in other countries, where you could access MAID for terminal illnesses that were causing irremediable suffering and that had a definite shortened lifespan. In 2020, the Canadian government changed that law, that the disease no longer had to be terminal. It had to be a chronic disease that had no cure, but that was causing suffering. And the catch is that an individual doesn't actually have to pursue all treatment options before accessing MAID. You can say, like, if you're diagnosed with multiple sclerosis and there's a experimental treatment available that might relieve your suffering, you can say, I don't care. Like, I don't want to access that. I'm going to proceed with MAID, and that's acceptable. So I think in some ways, the provision to allow primary diagnoses of mental health disorders as an avenue for MAID probably came out of an idea of equity, right? Like, to me, it makes sense. Like, mental health disorders are chronic diseases that are irremediable and cause suffering the same way as physical illnesses are. And I think that's probably where they chose to go ahead and add the provision to allow for primary mental health diagnoses. The issue is that the people don't feel confident in evaluating people with primary diagnoses of mental health disorders the same way they do suffering, because the suffering is all psychic. It's, there's no real physical component to it, right? So the conversation isn't as focused in that way. Although psychological suffering does qualify a person for MAID in Canada. Like, you can use psychological suffering as your, to meet that suffering criteria. It's just less, it's more commonly physical suffering.
Even with somatic symptoms for mental illnesses?
What?
I mean, because mental illnesses are more than mental, even though the brain is still an organ within the body, but.
But that's the thing. I don't think that there's a lot of people that feel confident in teasing that out. Like, you have to have two providers kind of approve you for MAID. I think the other issue that to me is the bigger issue. So a couple of things. First of all, since they've expanded MAID outside of terminal illnesses, there's been an increase of people accessing MAID who may be accessing it for social reasons versus health reasons. What? That are accessing MAID because of not having caretakers, not having good enough supports around, getting their physical needs met, things like that, poverty, right? There are people that are accessing MAID as a social, for social reasons over the physical. And those do qualify as suffering, right? Like, you are suffering if you need them for social reasons. I think the concern is if you add mental health, that population will increase. And I think a lot of Canadians who are opposed to like expanding MAID further than it is are worried about it becoming the pressure valve on a medical system that's struggling and failing right now. And the Canadian system is struggling and failing right now. My liberal heart is broken. Like, I thought that they were the answer. They are not. They don't have the resources, the means, the manpower, the money available right now to care for their population the way it needs to be. The other thing is, just like in the US, there's a huge dearth of resources around mental health. They just last week put out a like $2.6 billion package to try to expand. Don't quote me on that. I have 2.6 in my head. Maybe it was 264 million. It was a lot of money they just put out in the province of Ontario to try to expand mental health and addiction services in this area. So the other thing is, if someone comes for MAID for mental health and they've never really been treated properly, but you also aren't required to say you need proper treatment. Like, that feels like an ethical dilemma to me. If you're going to allow people to access medical assistance in dying for a disease process that isn't supported well, what does that mean and what does that look like, right?
Yeah, because even to receive really hospice care, it can't be a chronic illness in the U.S. It has to be terminal. So they're saying, like, even conditions, like if someone that's, say, developing early stages of, like, Alzheimer's or some kind of dementia diagnosis, would that qualify? I mean, it's a debilitating...
Well, here, let me. I've got the verbiage from the bill, so let me quote that you have to meet these three conditions: one, have a serious illness, disease, or disability; be in an advanced state of decline that cannot be reversed; experience unbearable physical or mental suffering from your illness, disease, disability, or state of decline that cannot be relieved under conditions that you consider acceptable.
Right.
Right. So, yeah, that is a really broad definition.
It's really broad. The other thing, like, as both a person with bipolar and as a nurse taking care of people with mental health disorders, there's also the very real reality that the severe, like, unlike other diseases, the severity of mental health disorders tends to decline when you're older. Like, the trajectory is usually that your symptoms improve as you get older, not the other way around, right? Whereas with other chronic disease, not to say that you don't still have effects from the disease, but they don't tend to be as severe with older people as they, like, who've been treated consistently through their life, right? So if you have a 30 or 40 year old who's within the first 10, 15 years of a diagnosis of schizophrenia and feels that it's unbearable, but you know that they, you know, they can stabilize over the next 10 years or so, but they don't have to accept that, right? Like, they can say, I don't care. It's real. So that's why. So I think that the law will go into effect. I haven't heard anything to the effect that they will repeal it. It's that they're giving it, they wanted to put in additional time to, like, talk through the issues and concerns around it and make sure that they have processes in place to address some of these questions. Because right now, I mean, people are still kind of reeling from the last one, which again allows people to access medical assistance in dying if they're not terminal, right? Like, to me, though, on the other hand, treating mental illnesses as any other disease process only seems fair. And as we all know, mental health disorders are terminal a lot of the time, right? It just looks different. So, you know, I have a client that I can think of right now who actively talks about, like, that's what she's waiting for. That's, you know, she knows that she wants to access MAID. She's really pissed that it got delayed. Like, now the talk is that she's not certain she wants to wait for it to come, you know, legally on the table again. But there are people that want to utilize it for their treat, for, as opposed to committing suicide in the more, God, sounds terrible, more traditional ways.
No, I think is there even a clause in there for, like, how alert and oriented you have to be to make that decision? It's like having psychosis or, you know, right, just out of touch.
You do have to be able to, you do have to be decisional. So you have to be able to give consent. So if you're floridly psychotic and you can't give consent, you can't sign up for MAID. But what you can do, like, they do this for people with, like, brain, different brain cancers or different neurological disorders, you can give pre-consent. You can say there's a way to bypass that immediately before death consent, where, again, I think it has to be witnessed by two providers. You have to have, like, all your ducks in a row. Like, it's a shit ton of paperwork, but you can give consent. And then if on the day of a procedure, you're not cognizant, they can proceed. So again, that's a question I hadn't thought about. What's that look like with some psychotic disorder? If you're selling me that they can't give consent to refuse treatment, you know, like, but they gave consent while they were alert and oriented and lucid that they want this procedure, does that consent hold over? My gut tells me that they wouldn't, that there would be that might be one of those things they're trying to work around or find an answer to. But it's real. And again, I think the social implications are really high here too.
Right.
Because there are not the resources that people need.
Once, so many of those things you mentioned, I'm just curious how they'll be ultimately operationalized, like suffering. Who determines what is unbearable, bearable?
What the patient. For, I mean, who determines it for every other instance. The one argument I've seen around mental health is that they don't know how to define irremedial, meaning not curable, that they feel like it's gray with mental health disorders, that there's very few instances where someone would look at you and say, no, this is not correctable. This would never go into remission. This would never, which is also ludicrous because the three of us know, like, they're irremedial.
No. Right.
Yeah.
But there's, like, sitting here thinking about this going, okay, well, what illnesses would qualify? And my closest thing I can go to is what qualifies like as a hospice definition of like a terminal illness or something that,
but
yes, you could
terminal.
Receive as care.
Yeah, but, that's, but what, also that's the thing. You do one. Not need to be terminal. That's the
does
whole
not
part.
Need to be terminal.
That is not, yeah, a prerequisite.
So like you could have cerebral palsy, right? And you could have declined, you know, say you have cerebral palsy and as you get older, you know, you end up with arthritis on top of it. So your mobility is even lower. And then, you know, you get a bed sore and all this and but you're not going to die from cerebral palsy. You're not going to die from a bed sore. You're not going to die from arthritis, but you can say the suffering's too much. Like
quality over.
That's quality very much. Yeah. Quality of life thing. Let me ask you this. Because when I was reading through all the things on, I was reading it from Canadian Department of Health or whatever, the ministry that is part of doing this. So I know they put a hold on the mental health condition until next mm-hmm. March. Have they put a hold on the whole thing or just, okay, so just no. that part. So that's the only part of that may or may not stay, but made without the mental heart, just the physical.
That's a done deal.
A done deal. Okay. Okay.
Yeah. And on, I think my understanding is mental health is a done deal too. They're just doing more process conversation and making right. sure that when they do roll it out, they have resources and protocols and expectations for providers.
Yeah. Okay, so more yeah, clarity, more safeguards. More, yeah, because yeah. again, what I was reading that they were talking about limiting it to actually naming a small number of personality disorders.
That's what I was wondering. Oh, if there would be certain qualifying.
As opposed to, just, yeah, that they would, just, yeah, that was one of the things that was floated.
What, like borderline or something?
Yeah, and yeah. That so taking out things like bipolar or taking out depression, but mm-hmm. making because the
interesting,
yeah, the mm-hmm. having like borderline, schizophrenia, anything that was more in those things, and that there was going to be like 3 to 5. I don't even remember what they were, but that was one of the things that was floated. Was, you know, what if we just said, okay. These are the things that qualify. I guess that's not gone anywhere.
That just means that 2 or 3 years from now, the rest will be included.
Okay.
What about substance abuse? The huge mental
yeah,
issue.
Yeah, see, I don't know that they count it. I don't know that they'd count it. They should. I mean, it falls under the DSM. I don't know. Yeah, they should. If their broad criteria is mental health disorder.
I'll ask it this way. All of us have experienced or are experiencing, depending on how you look at it, a diagnosis of mental illness.
Mm-hmm.
We all mm-hmm. carry. I'm just trying to get my mind around if I had access to this at the height of my depression years ago. Just trying to think, me now would say, want to tell me then, like, no, don't sign the papers, you know, but when you're going through it, man, I mean, it's just this mm-hmm. side of hell.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I'm like, I'm thinking of my wife and kids, like, what does their say? So yes, my body, yeah. you know, and that's a whole nother thing, but.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's so my research project for my program is on the effects of MAID on family members. And honestly, the research is pretty positive. There's not a lot of research, but what's out there is that if families are included in the conversation, if they're a part of the process and planning and are like included in the education and the conversations around decision making and all of that, that their grieving process is actually less intense than people who die in like regular hospice care.
No, it's the anticipatory grief. They're mm-hmm. But see, and that's, yeah. that's like saying with hospice, for instance, you know, the families that benefit the most are those that come in early,
mm-hmm.
that, you know, aren't waiting to the last minute. And there's all kinds of very good reasons why families, people would do that. But this is just kind of like, I know, gosh, I'm trying to think now, it's a documentary I think HBO did various doctors assisted suicides in the U.S. It was, mm-hmm. oh my gosh, I need to think of it now. But one of the states out in the West, I can't think it was Oregon or Washington.
Oregon, probably. Either Oregon or California.
A doctor could prescribe what basically would be a poison, if you will. And, you know, chemists could, like, you know, distribute it, or pharmacists. But ultimately, it's up to the person to actually put everything together. And I may have to edit that out to, like, find the actual documentary I'm thinking of. But still, nothing like these were still physiological. They weren't mental health diagnoses that would warrant that.
Well, in a lot of countries having, like, I remember, I want to say it's Sweden, maybe, having a mental health disorder, having a diagnosis of depression or bipolar is an exclusionary factor for accessing MAID, period.
But I'm sitting here thinking, also, when you said that, I'm like, dementia patients. I mean, we don't presently have a way of reversing that. And there is no dignity, you know, when people are just lingering, waiting on a system to fail.
Mm-hmm.
And that
yeah,
you know,
there's a lot of push to, like, do kind of living wills, but for MAID, for circumstances
right.
like that.
Like a most form or something.
Basically, yeah. Because right now, I think one of the pushbacks around MAID is that for diagnoses like dementia, if people want to utilize MAID, they have to use it earlier than they necessarily would want to in order to have capacity.
That wouldn't be any different than somebody writing a living will or a healthcare power of attorney. And if you think about it, but it's still that's a far cry.
Well, no, because
depression or anxiety.
Yeah, but even with you know, dementia, because my brother has that. He's got Lewy bodies, and yeah, living will and advanced directives. You know, that's when he's at the point where just physically. And saying, you know, no extraordinary means or anything like that. But I could definitely see somebody like my brother who made his living with his brain, right? And he was an attorney. And that's the organ that's failing him. You see someone saying, okay, you know, my quality of life, I'm not going to wait until, you know, I don't know where I am. I'm going to do this now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think that's where you get into these gray areas of, all right, do I just tell the doctor, okay, I'm going to consent to this, that in this future time when I don't know what I'm doing, you can do it, or hey, I don't even want to get there, let's do this now.
Yeah.
Where it seems that with MAID, the way it's constructed, you can do that. You don't have to wait until the end. It just has to be where you feel that you can't live this way anymore.
The other thing that comes up in the research that's interesting is how much of the suffering that people describe or the suffering that people are going through directly relate to the realities of being engaged with the medical system as often as they are. So how do you ameliorate the suffering that's caused by being a patient? How do you,
yeah,
right,
yeah,
because that comes up for people a lot when they talk about, when they ask them to qualify, like, what is the suffering you're experiencing? A lot of it has to do with the actual realities of frequent hospital visits, frequent doctor's visits, invasive treatments,
mm-hmm. not being believed as a patient.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and yeah, and again, I've seen this, you know, this was 10, 12 years ago at the beginning of this with my brother, going to doctors who are like, oh, no, there's nothing wrong. You know, oh, you're just getting old. You're getting forgetful. And he's like, no, this is my symptoms. This is what I'm, oh, no, you're not. We have this family history. But people your age don't, you know, the whole thing. It was as frustrating and aggravating as, you know, where he is now. So.
So how would they, I mean, I'm just thinking like the, I don't know why I thought of this, and you guys can shoot me down. It's like what we learned in the U.S. from making pain a vital sign, which it was never supposed to be. Mm-hmm. Is this not a similar argument for suffering? I'm not trying to allude to like the opioid epidemic, but, you know, medical professionals, because of the push of, you know, various outside forces, the pain is not a vital sign. But it seems like this kind of has a some kind of para. I don't know. What if the word suffering or is, you know, one person's 10 out of 10 is another person's two.
Right.
But then we've always talked oftentimes about who determines that.
And it is completely subjective. That piece is subjective.
Yeah. As we've said on this podcast more than once, we don't play the Suffer Olympics. You know, right. I've got a gold medal in it. Oh, you think you have a gold medal. You know.
Yeah, well, I gold medal that's a 68 in Mexico City. So, yeah. But correct me if I'm wrong, but Helena, it does seem like a lot of the language is intentionally vague.
It is, yeah.
Okay, but yeah, they wrote this in a way that there's a lot of latitude for the person seeking it, for the doctors.
People approving it.
Yeah.
So is there presently in Canada like doctor-assisted euthanasia? Is that a thing there?
There's two routes. You can get prescribed basically like the take home and overdose route, or you can have the medications administered by staff, like just prescribed and administered to you by the physician or the nurse.
So what kind of illnesses qualify for that? Or is there a...
Any of them. Most of them. Most people, the access may die that way.
Okay.
The patient-assisted route is not that common. They're mostly physician-assisted for whatever reason.
I feel like we're
more likelihood, more likelihood of success.
Maybe, yeah.
You know, so.
And it takes the onus off of you in some ways.
Yeah, because it's very intentionally not called, you know, suicide. It's not called euthanasia.
It's medical assisted dying.
If nothing else, I think that's a good thing.
I'm curious what theological question this is raising for folks.
I know. I really struggle with this because I have a very clear internal response that I could not participate. Like, I'm very clear about, like, I couldn't participate as a nurse. I couldn't participate as a family member, it would be really hard for me. I don't know. I would have to navigate that. I have one family member in particular that I could totally see going this route if anything ever came up that compromised their ability to be independent. I'd have to really struggle through that. But theologically, like, I don't believe in suffering as meaningful in and of itself. No. Like, I don't want people to be suffering. I don't feel that suffering's redemptive, but I also don't feel that, and again, like Charles said, they really shy away from calling it committing suicide or dying by suicide, but it is choosing your death. Like, there's something about that that theologically hits me
I don't have words for it. I just know that there's that space of like,
I don't choose when I'm born. I don't choose when I die. Like, that's not for me to decide. And that my responsibility in my life for myself and for the people in my world is to make sure that suffering is mitigated as much as it can be, right? Like, my responsibility is to make sure that people don't feel that things are it's too much. I also know with my own mental health that sometimes it's too fucking much. So, like, there's that too. Like, I also know sometimes it's too much. So, like, I haven't dug in too deep. Like, at school, obviously, theology is not what we're talking about. We're not talking about the emotional implications. We're not talking about the spiritual implications, but it just doesn't sit right for me. It just doesn't.
See, I want to go with my full liberal and go like, well, you do your life, you do what you want. But I'm also like going, there's still a real hang up there. And because it's not the same as, you know, hospice in the sense that people say, well, you're just killing people. It's like, no, the cancer or whatever was the terminal diagnosis doing a fine job before we got there. We're just choosing that person doesn't have to suffer with pain, difficulty respiration, either the sort of symptom management, the palliative side.
That's what it is, because it's not my life to do what I want. It's not my life.
Okay.
It's not my life to do what I want with. First of all, I mean, for me, in my faith structure, I this life is of God. Like, this life is given to me to live into what I can be according to God's will, which I know I don't usually use that language, but like, that is really how I see it. Like, who, like, God has Helena in this world to be Helena. Like, that is why I'm here, to live fully into what it means to be the person God created me to be. So there's that piece. There's a, it's not my own because of that. There's also the, it's not my own because I'm not in a bubble. I have an entire network of people who are related to and connected to me, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that's, it's not my life.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The interconnectedness.
Not mine. Yeah.
Right? I share this life with you guys, with my family, with my friends, with mostly you guys, my family, and my other friends. Like, that's really all I care about. I was about to get into, like, the larger web, but I don't really give too much of a shit about that. Like, I have an immediate web of people that, like, if I choose this, will impact all of those people. And granted, my death will impact them anyways, but it's not me choosing to leave.
This is where I agree with both of you, because first of all, I have a different theology. Yeah. I have a different theology. Yeah. Because, okay, theologically, which Jews don't have, what I see it in sort of with what Chris is saying, for me, it's not more, hey, it's your life, but this is, you know, if this was done in America, it either would be illegal or it'd be a Logan's Run and everyone had to do it. And I see the ambiguity in this language of, hey,
wow.
Yeah. Okay. Right. That's how we do things in this country, right?
Referencing Logan's Run on it. Okay. All right.
Oh, yeah. Deep cut there for you, folks.
Deep cut, man.
And I'm talking to the original. So with this, it's not, okay, this is something that has to be done, or no, we're not doing it. It's, if you look at it, that 99% of the decision here is the patients. The state isn't saying, medical community isn't saying, it's the patient's decision. And then from the Jewish perspective, yeah, we believe that we're here to perform tikkun olam, but we do have free will. We do have the ability to make decisions. And I think that if, and I think you mentioned this before, Helena, if that decision is made with you in consultation with those people in your life, that the way that this law is written, you can do that. Whereas, like I said, if this was an American law, that would not, you know, that would not have happened. So I see both the freedom in this bill that, hey, here's an option for you. If you want to do it, here's how you can do it and know that it's safe and okay, but no one is forcing you to make this decision.
So just as an aside, one of the more tragic outcomes of this bill has been people who have accessed this and not told their families.
Yeah.
Because there's no legal, it's considered the same as any other medical procedure. Mm-hmm. There's no legal expectation that you notify their families. There are stories upon stories upon stories of people that get calls from the landlord or the neighbor or whatever saying the morgue is here to pick up your sister. Do you know that she died? No. And then to complicate it even further, that confidentiality extends into death. So they don't have to have that conversation with them even at when they call the funeral home. The funeral home isn't required to give them any information.
Yeah.
So,
grief.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
so not to interrupt far, but.
No, like, and my response is one that I didn't say this was perfect, but also if you're at that place that you can't discuss these things with your family, that's a different discussion and issue too about society and our family. So, you know, and you know, I'm taking this from a different perspective that I think what this bill is trying to do is put that out there for people and giving them the choices, and everyone's got to make their choice. And some are going to make that choice, or they're going to do it on their own. I mean, that's not the choice I would make, but you know, that's another discussion about family relationships and people who cut off family for whatever reasons, you know, both legitimate and not. Yeah. And
one of the things keeps running through my mind, it feels almost irrelevant to say it before what we talked about, but this whole mind body duality, like how come psychiatric diagnosis, when we've always argued it's no different, having depression is no different than having cancer, organs impacted and how they're impacted, but mental illness occurs within a body.
No, I think in terms of equity and fairness, they shouldn't be separated. I think including mental illness is fair. And
but we talked about it tonight, though, there's a certain point with, I think amongst all three of us, where we're like, okay, I'm not ready to go full on like a depression diagnosis merits in the life assisted death, you know, doctor assisted death, the same way of terminal cancer. Because even in my mind, I'm going like, I know they're both illnesses, but, you know, the duality I often fight against it. It's tripping my mind and stretching it in ways I wasn't planning on having it stretched this evening.
Yeah. Well, what went through my mind is, you know, had this been available to me at my darkest, deepest point, I would not be here today. Because one of the reasons why I've never attempted, although obviously I think about it constantly, is the fear of failure, because you're not always successful.
Right.
Right. Well,
and this mitigates the fear of failure.
Right. So, you know, back 30 something years ago, when I was at, I mean, I literally could not get out of bed. If this had been an option, I'm telling you, you would not be talking to me right now.
You're muted, Chris.
I think it's still processing.
I was muted too, but it was just, I'm trying to get my mind around just at what point does a mental illness reach the point of like end stage cancer or COPD and, or even a dementia, like things that we generally use to say for like a hospice diagnosis. And I know this is different because this would be considering not terminal illness, but chronic, which would merit palliative care, but not hospice. And this is, it's just a totally, like, I don't necessarily have any problem with it. If you'd have left the mental health aspect out of it, I would have no problem with, you know, if you've got a late stage disease, you have zero quality of life, there's no medical reason this can be improved, and your family just gets to watch you die and linger. I mean, that's the old argument of you wouldn't let your dog go through that. You know, but then when you add the mental illness portion, I'm like, I'm surprised. I stopped short of crossing that line with that same argument. Mm-hmm. For the same reasons you are, Charles, is like X amount of years ago, you know, I could see myself, you know, forget letting the family know. And I'm just like, God, but that's also the theological point of my life merit matters to others. And, you know, was it John Donne's poem?
A man is an island.
An island. That's heavy, man.
It was interesting. We had a similar discussion. This came up in one of my classes at GTCC. And it was interesting. There were some definite division between the students who are like, yep, nope, that makes sense. And the ones who are like, oh my gosh, I can't believe this. And some of the ones who are like, no, I can see this as legitimate, were ones who then decided to self-identify as having mental illness issues, mental health issues.
Well, but yeah. Again, you're talking about a group full of people who are early diagnosed.
See, that's I was thinking the age.
Yeah.
Is there a consent age for that law and potential law in Canada?
19.
Okay, so.
Same as everything else.
Yeah. Well, not saying that they were in favor, like, oh, yes, I want to do this. They were like, no, that makes sense that mental illness is included in this kind of law.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, yeah. But also they're, again, like, and we're older and looking back and saying it got better. It's still not great, but it got better.
Yeah.
There are ways to...
The point is that the ones who had no experience, either personally themselves or family members, thought that that should not be included. It just goes back to the physical.
Elena, it goes back to Elena's point about the social dimension.
Right.
Is how many people suffer from a mental illness and have no regular, natural, or otherwise support network? And that's not hard to imagine.
Mm-hmm.
At all, which raises a bigger question for like communities of faith. You know, what is their role in caring for those amongst them?
Right. Mm-hmm. And that's what I was getting at when I was saying that, you know, if you're not in a position that you feel comfortable discussing this with your family, that's a whole different issue. That's where is that support network? Why is it not there? What has happened? Are there, faith communities agencies stepping in, why is this person so alone that
some of the narratives are people who do have contact with their families but choose not to involve them in this conversation,
right?
And maybe for good reason.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's also that I can't speak for anybody else, but in my family we talked about death and dying all the time.
Well, you say that, how many churches would be, they don't even talk about mental illness.
Well, that's what I mean.
Much less this.
Yeah, that you may have a great relationship with your family, but that, you know, a lot of people just don't want to have the conversations around death at any point.
Right.
And
oh, no, that's very real.
Yeah. I mean, some of my earliest memories are my parents saying things like, okay, now, you know, when I die, don't be surprised if mom gets remarried. Because in Judaism, death is not some big scary thing. It's part of life. And so you're born, you live, you die. No. So not saying that all Jews, you know, have these discussions. There's a lot who still don't. And it's not to say that Christians don't have these discussions. A lot do. But my point is that's one of those things that you could have a great relationship with your family, but when it comes to that topic, in a lot of families, death is taboo. You can talk about anything
else. Other cultures yeah. different.
Yeah. I mean, I'm mainly talking Western culture. Yes.
Right. Cause that's my orientation, but just to pull back and go, this is very different. If you're having different types of people speak about this.
Yeah.
You know,
like, I'm not sure that there are other, even Bach, I don't know if we could do this at Wild Goose. I mean, there would be people who would be, oh, yeah, this is great. And there are other people like, why are you talking about this?
It's triggered. Yeah, that would be for many of those. I would think that would be a very vulnerable. It's a great conversation, but it's.
Right.
But it's.
Right. Because our attitudes about it, our experiences with it.
But you think about it, though, the areas where we hesitate with this. Also name the areas where people of faith, people in general, could intervene.
Mm-hmm.
Or in some way ameliorate. Yeah, that fancy word, whatever. You know, it could be that type of care. I mean, if you've got somebody that's faced with this decision and there's not a support network around them, that's almost heresy or sinful. People of faith aren't like stepping up and going, all right, how can I stand alongside you?
Right.
At least let you have the support. And then if having that support, well, how do you feel?
Well, considering the state of the church, and I use that term very broadly in America.
Right.
How many times is that person going to come and tell you, well, you know, it's a sin.
They're not. Well, see, well, now that's
can you guarantee that? Can you guarantee that a faith group, you know?
Oh, God, no. They can't. They're more fixated with drag queens right now than actual, you know.
Well, in Canada, the religious landscape is mostly.
Yes, but, it's very different.
It's very different. It's not conservative evangelical, but it's very traditional. And yeah, is it, about half Anglican? Of the hospitals are Catholic. No.
Oh, okay.
I wouldn't think so.
And the Catholic hospitals don't, you don't have to participate in this. So Catholic right. hospitals, which tend to have more robust chaplaincy programs, mm-hmm. don't offer MAID.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, they didn't even think there's a definite role for chaplain.
Yeah.
Because yeah. pastors don't deal with health care. Not like chaplains do.
No. So,
I mean, how many times have we had to play cleanup as chaplain after a pastor has come and done his or her job?
Work to hey. Wisdom, Charles.
Okay, so we're putting a pin in that. So this is from Seneca the Younger, not to be confused with Seneca the Elder. Death is a release from and an end of all pains.
Well, I'm Chris Henson, and I'm still the Gentile.
I'm Helena Epstein, and I'm still the Ampersand of Reason.
And I'm Charles Breton, and I'm still the Jew.
Join us on our next episode, where you can listen to a Jew and a Gentile walk into a bar mitzvah. Wishing I could change
the things that I... Special thanks to Ethan Sapphire for letting us use his song Shoulda Woulda Coulda as our theme. You can download Ethan's music at soundclick.com/EthanSapphire. Can't give back the hand if you didn't like the deal. You made your choices, you gotta live with that. If you learn from your mistakes, you'll get another chance at that.